And here I must make a special mention of one of hidden figures in my chess life, and not just my early chess life. He took me aboard at the tender age of 10 in 1973, which was undoubtedly one of the most important milestones of my chess career.
You are listening to KasparovChess.com podcast, episode 2.
City of Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania, was the place where I was first tested on the old Soviet chess arena. In 1973, at age 10, as a member of Azerbaijan team, and in 1975 as an individual participant of the Soviet Junior Championship under 18. All Union Youth Games took place in Vilnius in July 1973. And in these games, as was usual for such events in the Soviet Union, junior events, many future grandmasters participated. Yusupov, Dolmatov, Alexander Ivanov, Malanyuk, Kochiev, Kengis, Lukutian, Yermolinsky, and so on, not even mentioning the future world champion and the future women world champion, Maya Chabudanidze, and the challenger to this title, Elena Khmelovska. Teams of the 15 Soviet republics, plus Moscow and Leningrad, were divided into three semi-final groups, 6, 6, and 5 teams. And based on the results of these semifinals, the first, the second, and the third final groups were determined, also 6, 6, and 5. Each team consisted of 8 players, including 4 juniors, not older than 18, 2 not older than 15, and 2 girls. In fact, I played on board 5, the first board of junior segment of the team under 15. The top, the final group, produced results that everybody expected. It was won by Russia, followed by Moscow, and Leningrad won bronze medals, and they were followed by Ukraine, Belarus, and Georgia. At that time, the Azerbaijan team was a solid second division team, and it was considered to be a great progress. But from 1974, we began regular finishing in the top 6. And in Vilnius, our team confirmed its reputation. We finished 3rd in the semi-final, trailing Ukraine and Georgia. And at this stage, I scored just 2 out of 5, winning 2 games but losing 3. But in the final stage, I was undefeated, making 4 fighting draws. And my team finished ahead of Uzbekistan, Armenia, Lithuania, Moldova, and Latvia, winning this leg of the tournament and finishing in the 7th place overall. At the conclusion of the games, I received my consolation prize for the youngest player in the tournament. But the most important result of this trip was my meeting with Alexander Sergeyevich Nikitin, state trainer of the USSR Sports Committee.
Он познал Карпова, но познал и самого себя, и, возможно, впервые по-настоящему в себя поверил.
My future friend, mentor, and reliable support in the most difficult periods of my life, my chess career. He became a master at a very early age, and in his youth, he played for the national student team alongside Boris Spassky. But then, after qualifying as a radio engineer, he for a long time disappeared from the chess scene. And yet, his love for the game outweighed other things. Early in 1973, Nikitin decided to devote himself entirely to training work. And later he developed the system of opening preparation by which we studied. Ironically, this trip to Vilnius in summer 1973 was Nikitin's first expedition in searching for future great talents. And it was Nikitin who in August 1973 arranged an invitation for me to Dubna, to the next session of Mikhail Botvinnik's junior school, which was undoubtedly one of the most important milestones of my chess career. In one of the future episodes of this podcast, I will tell more about my relations with Mikhail Botvinnik and his school, and what role Botvinnik played in my chess education. While my performance in Vilnius was far from being impressive, there was still a game that I remember. The game I played against a very strong Latvian Kennet master, future grandmaster, Edvin Kengis. And this game was later published in volume 16 of the Yugoslav Informator. This was our debut in this cult chess publication of the late 20th century. We played a very sharp line in Sicilian called Velimirovich attack. And I think Kengis was truly surprised that a boy from Baku was aware about intricate details of this sharp opening. I employed the idea first introduced by Bent Larsen in his famous game against Bobby Fischer, moving knight from f6 to c5. We played the first 18 moves fairly quickly. Optically, white attack looks very dangerous, but I had a full confidence in our analysis, and I didn't see any reason to worry about the strengths of my fortress on the king side. The idea of going back with bishop on e7, preparing h7, h5, is forcing white to repeat the moves. But of course, Kengis didn't want to make a draw so quickly, and he pushed too hard. Maybe Kengis would be more cautious if he knew that my confidence was very much based on the analysis provided by a great expert in theory, who happened to be a coach of Azerbaijan team at the time. And here I must make a special mention of one of hidden figures in my chess life, and not just my early chess life. Alexander Ivanovich Shakarov, who was the coach of Azerbaijan junior team for many years and took me aboard at the tender age of 10 in 1973. As I progressed, he went from coach to becoming a key member of my team, directing our analytical efforts. Shakarov was a very decent player himself, a national master, but he never had a hunger for the arena. He enjoyed coaching, and more than anything, he loved analysis and opening preparation. His passion for this supposedly boring research aspect of the game inspired me to find my own pleasure in it. And openings soon became a strong point for me, unusual in a young player.
E4 would fit better my strategical plan. Actually, these all Karpov's openings after E4, they do not fit his style. I mean, it's especially Spanish, his favorite opening. It's not easy for him to understand deeply the position.
Our collaboration lasted from the mid-70s until my retirement from professional chess in 2005. And even after that, my teams always followed his recommendations, and he helped me with my great predecessor's book series and all my chess books. And even today, nearly 50 years after we first met, if I have an analysis query, I know of no better person to ask than Alexander Shakarov. The game with Kengis was quite adventurous. He pushed really hard, and I could at one point refute his unprepared attack and to win by force. Then I missed it, and then Kengis again decided to push instead of forcing a draw, and I was quite proud that I found the refutation of his attack by returning my queen on c7. I even now can visualize this moment, and Genghis thought that it's almost over because black couldn't create threats to a white king, and he was probably already seeing his queen going back to f6, mating. But after queen c7, he was forced to exchange queens, and I had a winning endgame. And that was another trait of my chess character, receiving winning position after complications. I relaxed, and while my opponent played quite enterprisingly, trying to create counterplay, I lost my vigilance. And when the situation became complicated after move 39, he played h5, so I made a mistake by not finding the win, which I have to say was not an easy one. So it seemed that I was still winning, but Genghis realized that an endgame was 2 pawns down, was still a draw, because I had a bishop of the wrong color. And having an extra bishop is just a consolation, but it doesn't offer you a chance to win. So it was a draw. I was a bit upset, but it was a great game. Even now, when I look at this, I'm quite proud of my own accomplishments at age 10.